Hello and welcome to another Linguistics CareerCast, the podcast devoted to exploring careers for linguists outside academia. I'm your host, Laurel Sutton. This episode is an audio version of a virtual panel held at the Linguistics Career Launch in the summer of 2024. The video of this presentation is available at the Linguistics Career Launch YouTube channel. Links to the presentation materials and to other resources mentioned are in the show notes. This episode of Linguistics CareerCast is generously sponsored by Amazon Science. This presentation is titled Leveraging LinkedIn, Creating Your Profile and Using LinkedIn as a Research Database. The presenter is Alex Johnston, who is Director, Master's Program and Career Management in the Georgetown University Department of Linguistics. In this workshop, you'll learn not only how to optimize your own LinkedIn profile, but also how to leverage LinkedIn as a research tool in service of your career development. Consider this online platform to be the world's largest database of resumes and exemplar language for work experience in the vast array of jobs available. You can learn to use LinkedIn not only to showcase yourself, but also to find leaders in your fields of interest, learn the language varieties of different positions and sectors, create a worthwhile network, and locate the right people for informational interviews. Topics discussed include LinkedIn, community building, career learning, career discernment, networking, personal branding, career preparation, job research, and resumes.
Hello, everyone, all of you LCLers, and those of you who are watching this now, those of you who are watching in the future, it's such a pleasure to welcome you back. Today, I'm going to be talking about leveraging LinkedIn. And I'll tell you the agenda for today quickly. I have only a few slides. I'm not here to give you stats and figures about LinkedIn per se, or persuade you. Take a long time to persuade you to use it. I think you're here because you want to know how. And so we'll spend most of our time wandering through LinkedIn land and exploring together and showing how that process of exploration can help you in your career discernment. It can help you find people to connect with who are doing things that sound interesting to you, and how it can help you to learn about keywords in specific positions, sectors, organizations that will be useful for you to know in order to show that you have done your research and you're learning about new spaces, new work spaces. So our agenda for today, LinkedIn, do I have to? Short answer, yes, we're doing it. We're going to talk about how I can set up my profile, how I can use LinkedIn to build relationships authentically. And we're going to dive into that research database I call LinkedIn and have some fun. So we're going to get into it. And I just want to point out with this meme that I stole from the internet, no, LinkedIn, looking up people on LinkedIn is not stalking. Let's release ourselves from any other type of search way of searching on other social media platforms and not use that term stalking in the sense of, you know, I'm going behind somebody's back to secretly find out something about them. That doesn't apply to LinkedIn. LinkedIn, people who are on it are there putting information out in public or in certain restricted ways because there are ways to protect your data and your privacy and limit who can see it, but they're there to put out their profile publicly and professionally. And they mean to connect with people. They mean for you to see it. They mean to be discoverable on this platform. So if you look up people and learn about them, read their profiles, and start getting, you know, pleasantly surprised by all the profiles who start to pop up on LinkedIn, that's a positive research and discovery tool. And it's a great process to engage in. People will sometimes see that you have looked at your profile, but you can kind of hide that if you don't want people to know that you have looked at it. And that's perfectly fine. It's not meant to be weird. Let's not make it weird. Let's keep it positive. So use it as a research tool and take advantage of looking at people's profiles. And by the way, there is, I have often heard the question of, should I pay for LinkedIn? I don't think you need to pay for premium. You can get so much done with the free version. And when I've tried it out by paying for premium, it hasn't necessarily given me what I've needed in the moment. I'm not here to say you shouldn't try it, but you don't need to invest in that right now as you're building up your profile, building up your network. Also, I will give one stat. More than 1 billion people around the world are on LinkedIn. So it is the place to go for professional connections and learning about professional career spaces. There are people who aren't going to be on LinkedIn from certain sectors. So in academia, not every faculty member will be on LinkedIn, right? It's not how faculty members connect with one another necessarily. Although I'll show you an example of a faculty member who I think uses LinkedIn quite well. And you're not going to find people from the intelligence community. And I say that because I'm based in DC and many people want to work in the intelligence community. People in intelligence have their own network, their own networking platform. We're not part of it. If you want to learn about people who are in the intelligence community, there are ways to do that through, you know, person-to-person inquiries. And perhaps you will see somebody who is a former intelligence community member who has a very limited profile on LinkedIn. And maybe their last name starts with an initial and it's not their full last name. Maybe that's a hint that they're in intelligence or diplomacy. So let's get going. I do want to, before we dive in to our social media platform for the day, I've adapted a slide I've shown you before about how to keep professional relationships going authentically in LinkedIn. So they've accepted your LinkedIn invitation. Now what? So there are ways to be real and authentic and true to yourself on this platform and show people that. So here's some ideas for future sincere touch points or follow-ups. You interact with one of their posts or comments by reacting or commenting. That's a way to interact with people, but try to use your own words. The Gen AI tool will give you some suggestions for commenting, both in the message feature and in commenting, and that's going to make you sound like everyone else. So when I look on somebody's profile and I see it, and they've mentioned a promotion or a job transition, they're working in a new organization, and people say, congrats, name, congrats, name, congratulations, name, congrats, name. Often that's done by a quick click of selecting that response. If you use your own words, it will be a bit more authentic. Perhaps you took action on something that they posted about and it worked out. So tell them about it in a comment on the post or send them a personal LinkedIn message and express some gratitude. Give them some details about what happened. Perhaps you connected with someone in their network or they otherwise served as a bridge person for you, whether they knew it explicitly or not. Perhaps you found somebody in their network. So tell them how that new connection was helpful and include a detail and how you might work, move forward and thank them. It's always nice to be nice to the nice. You experience a milestone for yourself. You graduated, you accepted a job offer, you moved, you're establishing yourself in a new area, or you're seeking a job transition. So often when people are in transition, they don't necessarily post it on LinkedIn because that will say something to their current employer and people in their current organization. So when people are job seeking, when it's a first job, certainly put that open to work banner on your profile. Tell people you're open to positions in XYZ. But then if you are transitioning from job to job, or if you're thinking of moving from sector to sector, reach out to people in your network who might be helpful in that. And I personally very much enjoy it when somebody sends me a personal LinkedIn message and says, you know, hey, Alex, I've enjoyed my time at X organization, but it's time for me to move on and I'm seeking something related to Y. Just wanted to let you know. And then suddenly, that person is kind of primed in my brain. That's like this neural network is lighting up for me to suddenly think of that person whenever I hear about opportunities in XYZ. And I like to hear when colleagues, friends, former students are transitioning and want to let me know about it, because I really love providing resources and thinking of people they might connect with in order to learn more about different areas. So, you know, once you're connected with someone, you can use the LinkedIn messaging tool to have a bit more of a personalized interaction with them. And of course, if you come across a resource that might interest them or made you think of them, send it along. You can attach it to that LinkedIn message, send it to them, or if it's relevant to a post they made, link to it in a post. It's also nice. I just recently was on LinkedIn and I heard that a friend of mine had appeared on a podcast, and it was about her work in, you know, using, she's a MD PhD, and it was about her work using gold nanotechnology to do research to help people with neurodegenerative disorders. And she had appeared on a podcast talking about advancements in that area and what her organization was doing. And in my comment, I wanted to kind of amplify that she was, you know, in another great podcast interview, and said, "Oh, I'm excited to listen to this new podcast. You're such a great presenter, so clear and so effective when I hear you on podcasts." And I just wanted to be personal and tell her that I appreciated her work and let people know if they're coming across that post, like, "She's really good, listen to this." And then after I listened to this podcast, which is very personal to me because I have a dad who has a neurodegenerative disorder, I'm going to tell her, you know, this was so helpful to me just to hear about your expertise. So that's a way that you can, you know, take something that somebody posted, be personal in responding to it, and later follow up and kind of keep that relationship strong and active. All right, that's it. We're now going to dip into LinkedIn together, and you will see my profile, warts and all. I'm not presenting my profile because it's the best ever profile, but I'm going to use my profile as a jumping off point to talk about different aspects of your own profile and how you might think through decisions about how to optimize certain parts of it. So this will also expose my LinkedIn search history, just among us. If you see your name because you've reached out to me on LinkedIn, don't worry about it. This is part of, you know, this great work of connecting that we're doing right now. And I've so appreciated getting invitations and messages from so many of you. So I guess I can't delay any longer and I should just, you know, go for it. Here's my profile. And I'm going to talk through some parts, starting with the URL. URL, you can customize it. And I recommend this because it makes it more memorable. And when you are sending a URL to someone, if you're not embedding it into text, it will be easier for them to, you know, enter it and to find you and to see what your handle is. So even though I'm Alex Johnston, my URL is Alexandra Johnston. Moving down to profile picture. Is this professional enough? I'll tell you why I chose this picture. First of all, having a picture is good for you. It does get you more profile views. It does create more of a sense of immediacy when you see somebody with a profile picture. Does it have to be a headshot? Does it have to be professional? Do you have to pay for this? No. In fact, this picture, which I think is all right, I mean, it looks all right. It was taken by my husband in front of a garage wall. And so that was a pretty good, nice background there. And in fact, you can't see it, but my arm right here is being held out because my husband made me cover a piece of cardboard with aluminum foil to act as a light reflector because he's all into photography. That's a pro tip, how to create your own reflector if needed. But really, all you need is a blank wall. And why am I wearing a blazer and necklace here? I know that when that's working on my consulting business is one of the reasons that I have LinkedIn and that I network with people on LinkedIn. And I know that when I'm approaching a new client and they're learning about me, they're going to go to my LinkedIn. And the types of clients I have are, they tend to be more older, perhaps a bit more conservative. Maybe they're in the military or government contracting space. Maybe they're in financial services or agriculture, biotechnology. So I wear the blazer because I want to be, I want to project a certain image. And so that's what I do. It doesn't mean that you have to go buy a blazer, but think of showing a lot of your face. Think of showing, you know, don't wear sunglasses. I've helped people on their LinkedIn page by just saying, you know, put a profile picture up there where you can see your face, and don't spend money on it. Kind of know your audience and know who you are reaching out to. So if you are reaching out to kind of more conservative sectors, think about your appearance. If you are, you know, in tech, I think it can be, you know, way more informal, although we'll hear from people in our chat about what they recommend. And if you have colorful hair, should you use a headshot that doesn't show colorful hair? I mean, this is something that you have to consider for yourself and the type of audience you're reaching out to. Do you want to work in an organization where they might not approve of your colorful hair or your hair in general? This might be a way to screen out organizations that might not be a good fit for you. You know, if they can't handle that, is it a place that you want to work? So think about the types of audiences you might be reaching out for in different sectors and organizations that are, you know, more creative and geared towards graphic design or tech or, you know, the non super conservative organizations. It might be totally fine and it shows you as your authentic self. So consider who you're trying to reach out to. And I think it would be like a good way to screen organizations out, frankly, if they can't handle you at your fabulousness. So banner photo. I like to see banner photos that show some sort of interest. A lot of linguists put up banner photos that have, you know, IPA on them or have a picture of them engaged in a hobby. This is a picture of the Kamo River in the valley where Kyoto sits. And for me, that's personally very meaningful. And if people recognize that, then so much the better. It's something that we can talk about. So try to put up a banner photo instead of the default. Here you can see that you have a chance to put a recording of your name, which can be so helpful. Let's see what this sounds like.
Alex Johnston.
Ooh, Alex pronounces Alexandra Johnston as Alex Johnston. That's information. And there's a T in her last name, which a lot of people don't realize. So take the opportunity to put a recording of your name if you want to. You have the option to put pronouns if you care to. Okay, so moving on. This is your about section. And oh boy, I called myself a thought leader in career management for social science and humanities academics who transitioned to industry. Boy, she thinks a lot about herself. Thought leader is something that I use because, again, the types of clients in my consulting business are all about the thought leadership. And so I'm partially talking to them. 15 plus years as a global talent development expert focused on professional development and leadership training in the corporate biotech, ag, and financial services space. Right. So I'm letting them know in a nutshell, hey, clients, potential clients, this is what I have done. And you're going to see some academic positions in my profile, but here's the consulting expertise. And you'll also find that later. Extensive experience in international educational exchange and nonprofit leadership. And then I get into my linguistic training, sociolinguist and discourse analyst with a focus on intercultural comm. Are you interested? Are you going to click more? Some people won't. So, you know, make sure that the most important lines are up above the fold, as they say in ancient media about newspapers, but before the Seymour, make sure you have the most important stuff. And then there's some keywords here. Oh boy. All right, so I want you to create an about section, which you can use the generic of what you're doing now, what you're seeking, and what you've done in the past. That can be a pattern that you can follow for people to kind of understand who you are in a nutshell. And you can use I here. This is a chance to write a narrative, a curated narrative about your experience and what you're seeking and, you know, where you want to go from here. So these about sections are really important part of this genre. I didn't choose to use the personal, you know, I, but you can. So think about your audience and who you want to connect with, what kind of jobs you're interested in, and find people that are doing cool things that you like. Read their about section, read about how they talk about themselves. So for example, Cindy Blanco, who is working at Duolingo, has, I think, a nice approachable about section. Well, yeah, I was thinking of somebody else with the sort of, hi, I like to make language learning fun. But this is cool. Cindy Blanco, one of our career linguists who's been part of the LCL and been very supportive, you'll see that she calls herself a language scientist, focusing on language learning through technology. That is a very brief and succinct way to tell us about herself. And you'll see that she's using this other term, language scientist. Ooh, that could reach a different audience. For the people who don't know what linguist is, that sounds pretty good. It's also a title within Duolingo, the organization. So if we go through her profile, you'll see that she has gone through different positions at Duolingo, and we can get a sense of what the cadence of positions are in that organization. We can also see she has a wide experience teaching and conducting research in industry, academia, and the classroom. Actively apply research to language teaching and the development of new products. Versatile communicator who regularly engages with broad audiences, including the media, about language and research. This is great. I love these sentences. I love her keywords. And as we go down to look at her experience, you can see the different types of positions that she's held. Senior research learning scientist. And you can see that this is the first position she held. Maybe that's an entry level. Maybe you want to go to Duolingo and learn about what a learning scientist does. So then you start exploring that organization's website. Oh, Duo, so insouciant. And this is how you can start to explore. You can also start reading their posts. Look at posts that Cindy has put out there and see what you like about them. See how she posts about different positions available. This position I just talked about, they have several positions that are opening up there. So you can start learning a lot about Cindy and her work. And it might be enough for you to send an invitation to connect with her and say, like, I really liked your posts about language learning at Duolingo. Okay. Getting to a question in the chat. We've talked about tailoring resumes for each job. With that in mind, how do we list bullet points for our past experiences on LinkedIn? Thank you for that. That is such a good question. First of all, LinkedIn gives you a lot more space than a resume, which might be just one or two pages or so. LinkedIn, as you've seen, will have sections of experience that can go on and on. And it's the reader's decision if they want to see, you know, all other experiences, show all 15 experiences. Whoa, do I really want to get into that? Maybe not. But within these bullet points, you have the opportunity to shape them to specific audiences. And I wanted to show you one way that colleague Greg Bennett has shaped their teaching experience to their next position. So this is something that you can do too. Greg Bennett is a principal architect, generative AI strategy and prompt engineering, currently based, seated in Tokyo. And we can see here, I love this, these highlights. It shows us how we're connected, where we worked before, what we share as far as groups we follow, and also how many connections we have, he has, and how many connections we have in common. Like, whoa, we have a lot of overlap in our networks, which is great. But one thing I noticed about Greg's experience as I was looking through it today is that when he talked about a teaching experience, I noticed that he said, first of all, he quantified it. As an adjunct faculty member, he streamlined district objectives for classes of 30 students from 12 plus countries. Okay, that's great. But then I noticed the second bullet point, measured student needs through interviews and surveys to personalize tasks. And I thought that's pretty great, because from this adjunct faculty position, he was moving into design research, user experience, conversation design. And he took a bullet that could have been about assessment and differentiated learning. And instead he used terms like interviews and surveys. Interviews and surveys are used in user experience research. Personalized tasks. That's a general way to talk about differentiated learning, which is a teacher specific way to talk about making the curriculum individualized for each student. So when I saw this, I thought this was a great way that he was setting up his academic teaching experience for his next job, for people who would be reading it and evaluating him potentially for a user experience job or UI design job. So, and here he also, here he's starting to use these terms from user experience, like card sort, which is a method of user experience research. And here he's talking now about users and not about students. So that's a way that you can think ahead to an area that you might be interested in. If you don't have a specific area, at least try to translate some of your current experience to make it accessible to a wide variety of audience. So instead of perhaps talking about differentiated learning, differentiated instruction, talk about personalizing tasks. Instead of talking about needs analysis, talk about user needs or something like that. These are just some suggestions I have off the top of my head. And, as you read through somebody who has gone through multiple leadership roles in conversation design, you're going to start picking up some of the language used in that particular area. So Greg, when he, in previous positions, you'll see he talks about setting program vision. Program vision. I mean, this is something that you might do if you are, organizing a research program. Any faculty member who's applied for a tenure line job has to present their research program. And, that's kind of like a program vision. You're visioning, you're talking about what you're going to do. And it shows that you have a broad, 360 view of how to drive forward. So start looking at these terms. And if you don't know them, force multiplier, is that something you should look up? Maybe, might be. Drove a North Star vision. Oh, what's that? Actually, I'm curious about this because I love seeing terms that I don't know and looking them up and saying like, what's North Star vision in marketing and design? Scrum, you can look up what Scrum is. And best practices in thought leadership. Ah, industry kind of likes that. Okay. I also wanted to point you to Brielle Nikoloff's page, because I brought her up in office hours yesterday, I believe. And her page has gone through many iterations because these are always works in progress. So you can see here, her headline is really key to what she does now, startup founder with one successful exit, which means that the startup that she was engaged in starting up was bought out, in this case by Walmart, her current employer, and staff product manager. So Brielle is someone who had, if we scroll down to her education, let's see, did I miss that in my scrolling? You'll find out that she has a BS in neuroscience, BS in linguistics from UC Boulder. And she went from that into voice user interface design and Alexa skill design in a organization that works here in Washington, DC. And I mentioned that she got that because she sent a paper that she wrote directly to the founder and the CEO. And if you look through her, let's see, now the project. And the project, her paper, was called The Use of Profane Threats and Insults in the Anthropomorphization of Digital Voice Assistants. And then she gives a summary of this project. And this is what she sent off to show that even though she hadn't had industry experience yet in voice user interface, she had thought about it. She had thought deeply about it enough to write a term paper for Kira Hall about this and do some research. And that's the way that a class project or a term project might be a way to get a foot in the door in smaller organizations, where that can sometimes substitute for having had a position in a voice user interface organization. So that's where she got her start. I am going to look at the chat. I'm going to stop sharing for just a second and check out the chat and see what we can address here. One thing that I might like to do together is have you tell me, let's look up a space, a workspace, an organization, a type of work that a linguist can do, and let's just engage in some discovery together. So is there anything that you would like me to kind of go through together? And thank you, Victoria. I see that you use your LinkedIn experience section as an everything resume, and thanks for using that term. You're right. You can just make sure that you have your most salient, recent, current positions up top before the click to see more, click to see 15 other experiences. Make sure that those are up to date up top. And then you can, people who are interested will click through if they want to and read more about you. And sometimes you'll have to check too if you've included media in those different experience sections. Sometimes other organizational websites change the URLs. You'll have to update those. How important are endorsements? Thank you for that. I don't view them as super important, frankly. Some people, I want, you know, the people in our group here today to add to that discussion, but I don't necessarily think that is a make or break section of your profile. First of all, it takes a long time for people to scroll down to that. And second of all, if there are people who aren't necessarily from the same space, it may not mean something to those who are looking at your profile. I have not gone out of my way to ask people for endorsements. That's not where I spend my time when it comes to putting things on my profile. I really do focus on the, you know, accomplishments, the deliverables, the impact. I should do better on that. You know, I don't have a perfect LinkedIn, but I've looked at endorsements, they haven't necessarily impressed me any more than seeing the actual bullet points of what people have done or who else they're connected with. So I wouldn't, it may be nice to have one or two, why not? If somebody is willing to do that for you, I wouldn't say don't do it. But I think there are other more important aspects to spend your time on. Yesterday, I mentioned Berkeley has a system for filtering alumni. And is this applicable for other institutions that's worth showing here? Yeah, Berkeley did have, and I tried to find that in my history and I couldn't pull it up, but what you can do to find alumni from your institution, let's just go through and see how you can do it without looking at a dedicated page that will point you towards your university's alumni. First of all, people who are at current institutions that use something like Handshake, that's a way to access your alumni network. But I just go directly to LinkedIn and start with a direct search. So let me reshare LinkedIn again. And let's try to find some alumni. Let's just go with Berkeley. So I might just be interested in general in, oh yeah, I was looking up Berkeley stuff, Berkeley linguist, and just see what's out there. And so here some people are coming up and you can see that I have some options here. I can focus on people who are in my inner circle on LinkedIn, those first degree connections, and see who's there. I mean, right now they're giving me second degree connections, which is great. Because if you remember when we were talking about networking and informational interviewing, you want to get to that second degree connection to find out that, you know, even greater diversity of experience and knowledge. So I'm glad that I'm seeing second degree people because I can go in and I can say, wow, Alice is working at Grammarly and I've heard of that. What do people do at Grammarly? What does Alice do? And I see, oh, other people in my network are connected with Alice, but I'm not yet. Oh, but we're both in LSA. Hey, that's a connection. And analytical linguist. Okay, so that's a job title. What does that role entail? I provide linguistic expertise for developing intelligence features that help users achieve their writing goals through AI suggestions. In this role, I perform linguistic research and design experiments in the early proof of concept stage. Whoa, research, experiments? That's right up our alley as linguists. That sounds very great. Design and manage annotation tasks. Okay, a lot of you have data annotation in your background. That's something that you could highlight on your own resumes, especially if you're applying to something at Grammarly. There's some quality assurance work here. There's guidelines, there's training. So here's a chance to teach, but in an industry setting, and evaluate annotation performance. Okay, so you're kind of grading other people and how they've annotated and training them, you know, to let them know about guidelines and how they can reach those guidelines. So this sounds really interesting. And then collaborate with cross-functional partners to achieve OKRs. Ooh, what's an OKR? Let's look that up if we don't know what it is. And then you can see in Alice's background, some academic positions. And you can see their work at Berkeley. So that's pretty interesting just to start looking through those second degree connections. But I wanted to show you how I could restrict to looking at just people within my network who already are at Berkeley, who are linguists or have a connection with Berkeley. So I see my friend Jason has worked at the Berkeley Free Clinic. Okay. Our friend Laurel, one of the LCL OGs and leaders of the LBA SIG, my buddy, graduated from UC Berkeley and Laurel's a strategist and linguist. That's awesome. We can learn more about how she talks about her roles in various strategies. Nancy Frischberg, another OG out at Berkeley. Miriam, a former LCL attendee. So these are all people that I know already. So maybe I just want to, you know, restrict to people in second degree of connection. And that's where people like Alice will be of interest to me. Maybe somebody like somebody who's a senior linguist at ServiceNow. I haven't heard of that. We have one mutual connection. That might be something I look up, like what's that organization and how can you be a senior linguist there? What does that entail? Why don't we just look really fast? Oh, design natural language processing components of new ServiceNow natural language understanding capabilities by writing grammar specs. Hey, that's cool. Developed lexical, syntactic, and semantic rules. Great. Oh, text-to-speech linguists at Accenture. All right. Amazon Web Services, all these other things after having been at Berkeley and Foothill. That's fantastic to see this, this cadence of experience. And it looks like started as a translator, moved on to data management. This is how you just kind of see, how did people make transitions? How did they go from coursework to career? What was that first role? What are they doing now? Look at that cadence as they've gone through times and gone through different positions. And maybe there's something that you share with this person that you don't know about. So you can keep looking. Okay, there's skills, there's recs, that's nice. Mature emotional intelligence, and that's nice to see. You share these. This is this person's interests. And right, you can keep delving more deeply. So this is where you really want to invest some time.
Hi, we have just a couple of minutes left in the session, and there are a couple of questions in the chat that are kind of related that I think we can get addressed before we end. So one of them is about like listing experiences that might not be relevant to the area that you're interested in working with. And there's another question about listing work with organizations that either are not present on LinkedIn or no longer exist. Are those kinds of experiences either not relevant or with entities not on LinkedIn potentially harmful to list in your experience or not at all?
Okay. Great questions. First of all, with entities that no longer exist or that don't come up in LinkedIn search, like I just ran into this morning when I was looking up my old university in Japan that I went to as a Fulbright scholar, Osaka Kyoiku Daigaku, Osaka University of Education. It didn't come up with a little logo. It wasn't listed anywhere. I'm like, oh man, that's too bad. I listed it anyway. And if there are organizations that have been sunsetted or bought out, no longer exist, keep them in there. Brail Nikoloff was part of a startup that got bought out, that got acquired. You know, that's great to be part of that. Consider what role that organization played. You know, you don't have to list it, but just because it doesn't exist anymore doesn't mean that it's irrelevant. You've gained skills there. You produced deliverables there. It was part of your experience. So just because it's no longer active is not necessarily a detriment because mergers and things happen all the time. So that we're going to always be part of organizations that may have gone poof or been bought out. And then the other question.
Work that is maybe not relevant to the field that you're going into.
Yes. You know, I have tons of students who've had jobs in the service industry. So restaurant experience, bartending. This may not be the area that you're going into later, unless it's restaurant management or hospitality services. But I think having experiences listed that aren't necessarily relevant on LinkedIn are, first of all, let me tell you how they're relevant. If you're in a client-facing position as a in the service industry, boy, does that tell people a lot about yourself. And you can frame your experience that way, you know, optimized customer experience for over 200 customers or 500 customers per evening. Talk about how you had to multitask and pivot on the spot, and the work in a service position is so applicable to office work, so applicable to industry, because you are constantly on your toes about how to respond to people, how to analyze situations and smooth them over, solve them. So I personally am really impressed when I see service experience, and I think that shows a lot about how you can handle people. So it gives off information about your interpersonal skills and how you manage yourself and how you manage relationships. So if it's something like that, you know, I would say, again, if that's in your past, it could be in that see more, you know, section of your experience that people might choose to click and then read further. If it's in your recent past, like one of the things you're doing now, why not keep it in? But look at other people and how they've talked about their service experience and use some of their language. This is how you look at other people's profiles for inspiration to see what language are they using to talk about, you know, this high stress customer service position.
So the final question is addressing the issue of, like, what if you don't know specifically an industry or sector you want to get into and you want to make your LinkedIn profile, but is there a concern in making it too broad to appeal to multiple audiences? Does that come across as seeming unfocused or green? Or what are some strategies for people that maybe don't know what sector they want to go into specifically?
Thank you. I think you have a lot of ways you can optimize the bullet points and how you talk about your experience that can appeal to broad audiences. And you know, people kind of understand that people are at different ages and stages in their careers. So if you are, you know, currently in a degree program, you're a current undergraduate, or you're in a graduate degree program and haven't worked a lot outside of academia, you know, that's where you are right now. And yeah, maybe you don't know what to target next, but really focusing on writing effective bullet points that show in every aspect of your experience what you delivered and what was the impact of that is going to be helpful for people reading it from a number of different sectors. You know, try to think of ways to translate, you know, as Greg did, some teaching experience. You don't necessarily have to include specific terms from user experience, but talk about how you personalize tasks or talk about how you engaged in some type of needs assessment or evaluation of your students and, you know, quantify how many people you have, how many students, how many learners. Just as much as possible, try to engage in that action result format with quantification of your and impact of your deliverables. And that's going to carry across a lot of industries before you even start to drill down into different sectors. So I think you'll be just fine. I think you'll be great. And I appreciate all these great questions. I look forward to office hours next week. We can talk about this and more. And remember to train that LinkedIn algorithm. It's like a toddler. In the beginning, it's going to be throwing out a lot of behavior, and a lot of it will be unwanted behavior. You want to give it positive reinforcement by connecting with people you like, following people that have positive content that don't drag you down, and just training it. And the more you interact with it, the more that you train it, the more effective and useful it will become to you. So keep at it and devote just a chunk of time every day, every week to exploring. And I think you'll find it to be very useful.
Linguistics Career Launch is an ongoing nonprofit project currently led by volunteers that works to educate students, faculty, administrators, and industry employers about the value of linguists in business, government, nonprofit, and tech. The LCL has held two online boot camps during which attendees were able to learn from and interact with career linguists, as well as gain practical experience in career management skills. Videos of all our recorded sessions are available on our YouTube channel. You can get in touch at linguisticscareerlaunch@gmail.com.